ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय The reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 12, Text 17. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Saesha Jivo Vivara Prasuti Vamena Goshena Guham Pravishta Manu mayam sukshmam upecha rupam Matra svaro varna iti svavishta Sri Bhagavan vacha Saesha jivo vivara prasuti Anena Goshena Guham Pravishta Mano Mayam Sukshmam Upecha Rupam Matra Svaro Varna Iti Svavishta Sri Bhagavan Vacha Saesha Jivo Vivara Prasuti Pranena Koshena Guham Parvista Mano Mayam Sukshmam Upecha Rupam Matra Svaro Varna Iti Svavishta Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sa Esha.
He
himself. Jiva. The Supreme Lord. Who gives life to all. Vivara.
Within the heart.
Prasuti.
Manifest.
Pranena. Along with the life air. Goshena. With the subtle manifestation of sound. Guham, the heart. Pravishta, who has entered. Manamayam, received by the mind. Or controlling the mind even of great demigods like Lord Shiva. Sukshmam, subtle. Upetya, being situated in. Rupam, the form. Matra, the different vocalic links. Vocalic meaning coming from vocal, meaning spoken sound. Svara, the different intonations. Varna, the different sounds of the alphabet. Iti, thus. Stavishta, the gross form. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Lord can be perceived in a subtle form within the heart by one's mind, since the Lord controls the minds of everyone, even great demigods like Lord Shiva. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations. Report. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on the dialogue between Lord Krishna and Uddhava. Uddhava was bewildered and doubtful because Lord Krishna explained many different processes, such as devotional service, speculative knowledge, renunciation, mystic yoga, austerities, pious duties, and so on. However, all of these processes are meant to help the living entities obtain the shelter of Lord Krishna. And ultimately, no Vedic process should be understood in any other way. Thus, Lord Krishna explained the entire Vedic system, placing everything in proper order. In fact, Lord Krishna was surprised that Uddhava foolishly thought that he was meant to practice every process, as if each method were meant simply for him. Lord Krishna therefore wants to inform his devotee, My dear Uddhava, when I told you that analytic knowledge is to be practiced, pious duties are to be performed, devotional service is obligatory, yoga procedures must be observed, austerities are to be executed, etc., I was instructing all living entities, using you as my immediate audience. That which I have spoken and speaking now and will speak in the future should be understood as guidance for all living entities in different situations. How could you possibly think that you were meant to practice all the different Vedic processes? I accept you as you are now, my pure devotee. So you are not supposed to execute all of these processes. Thus, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord, with light-hearted and encouraging words, reveals to Uddhava the deep purpose behind the variety of Vedic procedures. Lord Krishna became manifest from the mouth of Lord Brahma in the form of the Vedas. The word Vivara Prasuti in this verse also indicates that the Lord is manifest within the Atharadi chakras situated within the body of Lord Brahma. The word Goshena means subtle sound, and Guham Pravishta also indicates that Lord Krishna enters within the Adhara chakra. The Lord can further be perceived within other chakras such as Manipuraka chakra, located around the navel, and the Vishuddhi chakra. That's all basically coming from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport. That's where that's from. The Sanskrit alphabet is composed of short and long vowels and consonants pronounced with high and low tones, and utilizing these vibrations, the different branches of Vedic literature are manifested as a gross form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Bhagavad Gita, such literatures deal mostly with the three modes of material nature, Strigunya, Vishaya, Veda, and Strigunya of Arjuna. Srila Sridhara Swami explains that due to the control of illusory energy Maya, The personality of Godhead appears to the conditioned souls as part of the material universe. The imagined imposition of gross and subtle material qualities on the personality of Godhead is called avidya, ignorance. And through such ignorance, the living entity considers himself to be the doer of his own activities and becomes bound up in the network of karma. The Vedas therefore order an entangled soul to observe positive and negative injunctions to purify his existence. These procedures are called Pravritti Marg, or the path of regulated fruitive activities. When one has purified one's existence, one gives up this gross stage of fruitive activity because it is detrimental to the practice of pure devotional service. By firm faith, one may then worship the personality of Godhead. One who has developed perfect Krishna consciousness no longer has to perform ritualistic duties, stated in Bhagavad Gita, Tasya Karyam Navijite. All right, now if you've gotten all that, we're going to go into another interpretation. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, this verse may be understood in another way. The word Jiva indicates Lord Krishna, who gives life to the residents of Vrindavan. The Vivara Prasuti indicates, that although Lord Krishna eternally performs his pastimes in the spiritual world, beyond the vision of the conditioned souls, he also enters within the material universe to display these same pastimes. The words Guham Pravishta indicates that after displaying such pastimes, the Lord withdraws them and enters into his unmanifest pastimes, or those pastimes not manifest to the conditioned souls. In this case, Matra indicates the transcendental senses of the Lord, Svara indicates the Lord's transcendental sound vibration and singing, and the word Varna indicates the transcendental form of the Lord. The words stavishta, or gross manifestation, means that the Lord becomes manifest in the material world, even to those devotees who are not completely advanced in Krishna consciousness and whose vision is not completely purified. Manomaya indicates that somehow or another Lord Krishna is to be kept within one's mind, and for the non-devotees, Lord Krishna is sukshma, or most subtle, because he cannot be known. Thus, different acharyas have glorified Lord Krishna in different ways through the transcendental sound vibration of this verse. Om Jnanatamananda Shaganjana Salakaya Chakshanukam Yanakasma Sri Gave Namaha Panchapapa Truvishcha Kripasana Devacha Patitano Pavane Bhyo Vaishna Devyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So this is a somewhat challenging verse and purport. At least I found it that way. Kind of breaking this down a little bit. And the purport, and of course, these purports are primarily coming from our previous acharyas, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, and Jiva Goswami. So we consider these very authorized interpretations of this verse, and you can see there's some different perspectives on it, which often happens, that our different acharyas see a particular verse in a particular way, and because Krishna is unlimited, and Krishna's words are unlimited, and his pastimes, everything is unlimited. There's practically unlimited ways that you can understand Krishna's words. And it's interesting, sometimes even within a single commentary, particularly Sanatana Goswami, I think in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, sometimes he'll, within one purport, he'll say there's three different interpretations of a single word or phrase or something like that. So we can understand that, you know, Krishna can also express many meanings within a single statement or a single verse. Okay. So I saw there are three main themes here in the verse and purport, primarily in the purport. First, that Krishna presents many paths of spiritual realization. And in our last purport yesterday was read, there was kind of a breakdown by the different verses of the progression of how Krishna discusses many different paths of self-realization. And now we're seeing that Uddhava is expressing some bewilderment. And then Krishna explains that these paths are not really meant for him, and we have the commentary on that. In the second part of the purport, Krishna talks about, or is explained, Krishna's manifestation within the gross and subtle energies of the material world. And then in the last part, we have Jiva Goswami's commentary talking about Krishna's manifestation of pastimes within this material world. Some of his pastimes are unmanifest, those in the spiritual world that are not seen by us, and those that are manifest within this material world. So I'll talk about those three parts of the purport. So first, why does Krishna present so many paths? It's interesting that Uddhava is bewildered by this. You know, why is Krishna presenting Varnashram Dharma and Yoga and Karma and Jnana and so many other things? Then he kind of keeps coming back to Bhakti Yoga. And the explanation here by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is that Uddhava is thinking he's supposed to do all of these things. Krishna's giving him all of these instructions, so therefore do I have to do all of these paths? And so he becomes a little bit bewildered, and Krishna clarifies that. I was thinking that sometimes we might also experience that. Have you ever thought, well, why does Krishna present Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Sankhya Yoga, and then he kind of rejects them? he says, you know, here's all these paths, now don't do them, just do pure devotional service. You know, so we experience that often ourselves. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, as we said, all these different paths. In fact, we talked about this in last week's class, that the different paths are presented. But then Krishna always brings the conclusion to Bhakti Yoga. Just as at the end of the sixth chapter, after all, in the first six chapters, the different types of yoga are explained. Then he says, of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and highest of all. That is my opinion. So Krishna presents different processes, but he always concludes with the necessity of pure devotional service. And of course, his final instruction in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Parichaya, give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. So always Krishna's final word is surrender unto me. Bhakti, devotional service. But why do we have these different practices presented? Well, first of all, there are different categories of living entities, different jivas who have different desires, they're in different modes of nature, and they have different levels of spiritual advancement. And also perhaps there are different levels of attraction, different inclinations towards self-realization and different attractions to Krishna in different ways. Just like we see even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear right in the second chapter, Vedanti Tad Tattva Vidashtam, Adhyanam Advayam, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shamdite. The learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So right there in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that there are different levels of understanding and realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada explains this word of Advayam, which means non-dual, means advanced devotees see all of Krishna's energy. They see that Brahman is part of Krishna, Paramatma is part of Krishna, and of course Bhagavan is the supreme understanding. But he says, yet, there's a difference in the qualities, a difference in the quality of the energies. So, it's all Krishna's energy, but it's not all one. There's variegatedness. There's always variegatedness. So in one sense, we could say these levels are equal, but on the other hand, we can understand there's also a progression of depth of understanding and realization leading to Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And, of course, the Bhagavatam also goes on to explain that even those that are highly realized, those who have almost perfected their lives, those who are without material desire, what do? They come to bhakti. And, of course, we have the famous Amarama verse, Atmaramas Jamunaya Nagranta Apyurakrame Kurvantaitakam Bhaktim Itam Bhuta Guna Hari 1710. And of course, we all remember Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 64 different explanations, breaking down this verse word for word because he considered it so important. And of course, the translation. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead. This means the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore attracts everyone, including liberated souls. And of course, we have examples of those great souls who are totally liberated. They were on that liberated platform, but yet they then became attracted to devotional service. Think of any examples? Four Kumaras. one of the best examples. They said that they just smelled the incense offered to Krishna. In other words, just by coming in contact, you know, with bhakti, their minds changed from complete, total, impersonal, I mean, they were perfect in impersonal realization. They weren't mayavadis. They were understanding the Brahman feature of the Lord. And who else? Shukadeva Goswami, another example of one who was on the totally liberated platform, but when he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam in the womb, he became completely attracted to the personality of Godhead, and then, of course, became the greatest exponent of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, of being able to explain the highest truths of Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us all information, and the Bhagavad Gita. All the processes are given there. First of all, devotees should not be ignorant. If you think about it, what if we read all of these scriptures and they only talked about bhakti, and then we came across and some said, yeah, but what about this form of yoga? And what about, you know, karma? And what about understanding super soul? And we go, what? We only know, you know. In other words, the devotees need to know the full range of spiritual realization and need to know all the different aspects of Krishna and how Krishna manifests and the different processes and paths towards coming to Krishna. So first of all, we need to know these. And of course, secondly, they are actually aimed at those who are on those particular paths and have those levels of realization. So through knowledge and understanding sort of the whole range of, it's kind of, here's all your possibilities. So, and here's the advantages and disadvantages. Which do you choose? Well, devotees become very convinced of the process of bhakti yoga through this process. And Krishna clearly explains the superiority of bhakti yoga, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita. So we understand that what we're really meant for is the direct path to Krishna. And Krishna then clarifies, he says that these are not meant for Uddhava, these aren't meant for his devotees. Because Uddhava's on the path of bhakti, that's the path, he's perfected bhakti. So he's the audience, as it's stated here. Krishna's speaking all these things, Uddhava's his audience, but it's meant for the whole world. Obviously, it becomes part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but Uddhava Gita, very famous instructions of Lord Krishna, it's for the world, for everybody to benefit from. So, I don't know if it was absolutely clear from the verse, but this commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, where he's explaining sort of the backstory, the relationship between Krishna and Uddhava and what Krishna is trying to tell Uddhava, explains this nicely. It kind of clarifies, you know, why this is happening this way. Now, Krishna also talks about we manifest in the material world on both the gross and subtle levels. And then it's explained, of course, it is not that Krishna becomes tainted or contaminated or part of the material energy in a sense, although the material energy is coming from him. He remains completely independent. He is always spiritual. But at the same time, he can be seen and manifested in his different energies, gross and subtle. And Sridhar Swami in his purport said that the imposition of the gross and subtle energies is by the conditioned souls. In other words, we impose these limitations on Krishna that he's somehow, because of our own understandings of the gross body and senses and the subtle mind and intelligence. And this is a call, of course, avidya, ignorance. In other words, to think that Krishna is part of, you know, our own conception, our own tainted conceptions of the gross and subtle energies is a great mistake. We understand that these energies come from Krishna, but it's almost, but they don't touch him in a sense. Okay. So, here this further description of how Krishna manifests in the gross energy of sound vibration, and also through the subtle, he manifests through subtle energy through the chakras of Lord Brahma. Now, if you want to know more about that, you're going to have to look elsewhere, because I have not really seen anything more about this topic. I mean, maybe I missed it somewhere, but I don't remember Srila Prabhupada talking about the subtle energies of the chakras of Lord Brahma anywhere. So, this is all the information I have. Although there's a footnote in Vishnu, in the commentary of Vibhana Swami's translation of Vishwanath, that this is discussed more in the 26th chapter of the 11th canto. So you can look forward to that if you want to know more about this very esoteric idea of how Krishna manifests through Brahma's chakras. Okay. So we'll go on. In the beginning stage of bhakti, it's difficult to see Krishna always. So God is everywhere, but we can't see him. Srila Prabhupada says we don't have the eyes. You know, we cannot see Krishna through our material vision, and therefore we see Krishna through hearing. And often that understanding is seeing Krishna through his gross and subtle energies. In other words, he manifests in such a way that through our conditioned senses and mind, we can somehow get some understanding of Krishna. And so the process is given, how we begin first by seeing Krishna's energies working, then later we may see, at some higher level advancement, Krishna himself directly. So when you think about it, how do we experience Krishna? We usually experience Krishna through his energies. Because first we understand that there's an energetic source behind everything. We see this material world, we see this energy, we see the sun, we see, you know, so many things that are around us, all these manifestations. We can understand that there must be a source behind that. And Prabhupada gives examples like the powerhouse. You know, we look at these electric light bulbs, and we can say, okay, well, there's light. It's coming from those bulbs. But if you have a little bit of knowledge, you understand that the wires go down, they go to the transformers, and eventually go to a powerhouse, which is generating this energy that's being manifest. So we'd be in ignorance if we just said light bulbs are the source of light in the universe, right? You know, because they're not. I mean, ultimately the sun is, of course, and it transforms energy, and the powerhouse takes some of those elements. But anyway, we can understand this idea of transformation of energies, and always understanding that Krishna is the source of those. So we learn to see Krishna in everything. And that's being described here, how he is in his subtle and gross energies. In chapter 3 of the little book on the way to Krishna, it's one of my favorite those small books. The chapter says, seeing Krishna everywhere and always. And Prabhupada quotes the verse, of course, from the Bhagavad Gita, Son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras, and I am the sound and ether and ability of man. Prabhupada says, in this verse, Sri Krishna is describing how we can become Krishna conscious fully in all stages of life. All living entities must drink water. The taste of water is so nice that when we are thirsty, nothing but water seems to do. No manufacturer can create the pure taste of water. We can thus remember Krishna, or God, when we drink water. No one can avoid drinking water every day of his life, so God consciousness is there. How can we forget? So again, all these explanations are given in the scripture, especially in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 7, and then again in chapter 10, about how we can see Krishna in the material elements, in the gross and subtle elements, and thus be able to remember him. Now, the third part of this purport had to do with Jiva Goswami's commentary. And he was taking it from a different angle about how Krishna's pastimes are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. So those unmanifest pastimes are those in the spiritual world, and they're not really seen by the conditioned souls, but they're eternally occurring in the spiritual world. This is Krishna's eternal lila. The manifest pastimes are those that are displayed in this material world, and they're available for the benefit of devotees, non-devotees, devotees who are not yet pure, and those who are his pure devotees. They're really available for the benefit of everyone when he manifests in this material world. So in this material world, you might think, okay, why does he come and manifest? The material world is predominated by the external energy, Prakriti. And most of our world and perceptual field is composed of interactions with matter. But the spiritual energy is also present, the living entities, of course, the jiva, spiritual energy. We also have the all-pervading Brahman. Brahman energy is all throughout this material world. And of course, the Paramatma is there within the heart of every living entity, within every atom. Prabhupada said, within every atom and even between every atom, there's Paramatmas everywhere, pervading. So we can experience spiritual energy in some ways, and we particularly experience spiritual energy in other living entities, because the jivas are all spiritual energy. But even when this mixture of energies, our experiences and our happiness is somewhat limited, because we're constrained by these bodies, and the activation of material energy. So therefore, things become difficult. It's hard to achieve happiness, even though there's spiritual energy in this material world, because we are usually wrongly perceiving it or seeing ourselves as the enjoyer of that material energy. Therefore, we have so many difficulties, and we experience unhappiness within this material world because of a misunderstanding of how these energies interact, who is the source of those energies, and how we are meant to utilize those energies in the service of Krishna. So Krishna comes into this material world occasionally on his schedule, on his own schedule, and he brings himself and all of his spiritual energies. Krishna manifests his abode of Vrindavan. When he comes 5,000 years ago to Vrindavan, India, he manifests his energies, his pastimes, his associates, so many things. So in Goloka, everything is composed of this unlimited spiritual energy, where Krishna's pastimes and manifest energies are the norm. In other words, what we saw a little glimpse of 5,000 years ago in India, that's what goes on eternally. That's Goloka Vrindavan. But in the material world, when the spiritual energy and pastimes come, they seem extraordinary. Right? People think, well, how could this happen? You know, how could there be millions of cows? How could there be, you know, whatever? You know, we hear things of pastimes of Krishna, how he jumps off a mountain. How high was it? I don't know. How many? 80 miles high, you know. I mean, so how does this happen? Because this is not part of the workings of the ordinary material energy, which we're familiar with. This is an extraordinary energy, which is Krishna's spiritual energy manifesting within this material world. And therefore, these different things seem miraculous. Right? When the spiritual energy acts in the material world in ways which defy normal material energy, we call them miracles. Right? And other religions even say that. These are miraculous happenings because the spiritual world is not bound by the same limitations of space and time. And therefore, when the spiritual energy comes to this material world, and said, of course, spiritual energy is always here, but when Krishna directly manifests his pastimes, it's very, very extraordinary, even miraculous. So Krishna manifests his pastimes in this material world to attract the conditioned souls, to do extraordinary activities, to show us here is God, here is the personality of Godhead. And he does it in a way that is very attractive. He just doesn't come down and start throwing thunderbolts around to scare us. He manifests the most beautiful, wonderful, loving pastimes with his devotees to attract the hearts and minds of the conditioned souls. I wanted to read the last couple lines of the purport again because I thought this was a good understanding. It says, the word stavishta, or gross manifestation, means the Lord becomes manifest in the material world even to those devotees who are not completely advanced in Krishna consciousness and whose vision is not completely purified. Manomaya indicates that somehow or another, Lord Krishna is to be kept within one's mind, and for the non-devotees, Lord Krishna is sukshma, or most subtle, because he cannot be known. So this is interesting, because what it's saying is that Krishna's appearance helps the devotees absorb their minds in him. Krishna comes not just for his pure devotees who have come, often joined him from the spiritual world, or he asked the demigods to all take birth, you know, in Vrindavan ahead of him. But he also comes for the benefit of those of us who are not pure devotees, you know, who may be devotees on the path, but yet we are not perfected yet, which means most of us in the material world. So these wonderful pastimes of Krishna that he manifests as manomaya means that somehow or another we need to keep those pastimes in our mind, become absorbed. And when we think of Krishna, when we look at the beautiful form of Krishna, when we become absorbed in the holy name of Krishna, which is non-different from Krishna, through chanting Hare Krishna, and through association with devotees who are also manifestation of Krishna's spiritual energies, then we become absorbed. Then the mind starts to gradually come around, become more and more, I guess you could say, in sync with Krishna's desires. with what is Krishna's plan, or what is Krishna's path? What does he want for us? And what is our relationship with him? As the mind becomes more attached to Krishna, the relationship, it's not just a mental intellectual thing. It's that the relationship develops. Our relationship develops, begins to increase, and of course the foundation of that relationship is love. Loving devotional service. So, the mind becomes subservient to Krishna through the manifestation of his pastimes. The mind becomes convinced through the philosophical discourses Krishna gives, and thus we become more and more fixed on the path of Krishna consciousness. And our relationship with Krishna, his holy name, his form, etc., will advance more and more. Okay, I'll stop at that point. Hopefully there's not too many questions on the technical aspects of this. But all right. Comments, questions? Yeah, Puner?
This class. I think one of the things that stimulated me to think a little the most things that you said was when you explained about the various energies of Krishna, Vasuhana, Sukunteya, and the sun and the moon. And I recall Srila Prabhupada saying verbally that this, to understand Vasuhana, Sukunteya, that I am a taste of water, is the very beginning of Krishna consciousness. And from personal experience, when I was very off and struggling for medicine, that was the thing I remembered. The Srila Prabhupada said, this is the beginning. So I said, I have to start over. And so I concentrated on that. And anyway, that was what Prabhupada said. This is the beginning. And I am at a place to spend the day. He said that after only one chapter, it is very important to know all of these aspects of Krishna for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that showed even more how this is the beginning, didn't Prabhupada, I forget if it was in the context of these verses, when he said, for the drunkard or something, he can understand that the enjoyment of the taste of wine, that is coming from Krishna too. So in other words, from whatever platform you start at, even a very low platform, if you can understand that somehow this is from God, somehow this is all coming from him, the energy, even the wine you're drinking is coming from God ultimately, then that's the beginning. And that's the beginning of spiritual life. Of course, it's interesting. When we say beginning, it's not like, you know, okay, here's you know, materialistic life, here's the beginning, and here's like the end. Actually, that beginning, it's very, very critical. It's very important. It's a huge leap. You know, when the conditioned soul begins that process of surrendering, begins that process of understanding Krishna and seeing everything as part and parcel of Krishna, that's a pretty good realization, actually. Of course, then we have a long way to go to purify our heart and mind so that we can continue and increase that realization. Thank you. Nice point.
I remember a funny story that Atmadev Prabhu was complaining that there is a big ashram with an impersonalist, and he went with Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he offered it. And he said, no, I don't want. Your Swamiji is biased to Krishna. So then he said, how is this? He said, open Krishna, third chapter, Karma Yoga. Where does it say action in Krishna? He translated the action in Krishna consciousness. But this is Karma Yoga. So he comes back and tells Prabhupada, and Prabhupada laughed and laughed, and Prabhupada said, oh, he's getting it, good. So then Prabhupada said, actually bhakti is saturated in entire Bhagavad Gita, even though it appears like there is a Karma Yoga, Gana Yoga, but it is Prabhupada's mercy that he pulled it out.
Yes.
In lexicographic translation, if you look at it, the Karma Yoga has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness in a sense, externally. But Prabhupada put it in esoteric. That's Krishna is going to speak.
Yeah.
He translated the action in Krishna consciousness.
Right. And that's, well, the fifth chapter was action, wasn't it?
Third chapter.
Yeah. The third chapter is Karma Yoga and action. Yeah. But that's a very interesting point, because if we just took Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam with no commentary, how clear would it be to us? How much would we understand? Okay, raise a hand. How many of you read a Bhagavad Gita before you read Srila Prabhupada's? Some form. Okay. Did you really understand it well? Did you get it? Did you understand how this was all about serving Krishna and who Krishna was? No. Same with me. I thought, hey, this is really some interesting ideas here, but I had no idea what he was talking about. When I read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, it all became clear. It was simple, it was clear, you know, okay, you know. And, you know, like Prabhupada says, how do they write these commentaries when Krishna says, you know, mom, you know, it's me, so it means, oh, that doesn't mean Krishna, that means, you know, the God within you or something. Krishna is saying, surrender to me, you know. So, yeah, without the understanding of our scriptures through the lens of the acharyas and through the pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, we'd really be bewildered. It'd be very, very difficult to understand. And at best, it would be probably a very confused, mixed understanding.
I have one question for you. You gave a very nice explanation. In Vishnu Chakuti Thakur purple, it looks like Krishna is saying that you need to know all this, Uddhava, but you who you are, you're not going to change. So purpose is that he has to be endowed to deliver this to Bhadrikashram when he goes there, but at the same time, he's not going to change by adopting all this process that they explained.
Right.
I was very interested that.
Yeah, and this was pretty close, almost 100% word for word from Vishnu-Chakravarti Thakura's, you know, it's taken right from that. What did he say? That was interesting. He said, how could you possibly think you are meant to practice all the different Vedic processes? I accept you as you are now, my pure devotee. You're not supposed to execute all these processes. Yes. Just be my pure devotee. You know, I'm telling you all this, but don't worry about it too much. Yeah. Good proof.
Thank you for class. The problem that Uddhava is, or the situation that Uddhava is got himself into, seems to be what's being promoted since the 19th century into the present by so many organizations that are teaching yoga, different forms of yoga. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, sprinkle a little of this yoga, sprinkle a little of that, and then do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that. We might not do it all, you know. And so it becomes very popular, and it becomes sort of like a jack of all trades type of situation. So my question is it possible to go from that sort of doing it all type of thing to seeing it as a ladder, like a stepping stone situation?
Well, yeah, with spiritual realization and the instruction of the acharyas, and you know, one could understand that it is a ladder, that it, and Prabhupada called it the yoga ladder, and that those are words he used, you know, but Prabhupada said it could be a very long, slow ladder, it could be many lifetimes of a ladder, and so what did Prabhupada say? Take the elevator. The elevator is bhakti yoga. He said, take the elevator, chant Hare Krishna, just, you know, in other words, go to the end, the essence of all of them, you know, surrender to Krishna, serving Krishna. He says, so why not just go right there? Why not just do that? Why spend lifetimes trying to... Plus, in Kali Yuga, they're so difficult. Meditation is so difficult. I mean, you know, I've given this example before, but I had a niece or relative who said once she was doing Ashtanga Yoga, and I'm no expert at it, but from what I understand, what Prabhupada's told us about the Patanjali system, the Eightfold Process of Ashtanga Yoga, good luck with that. You know, I mean, it's very difficult, right? It takes a tremendous time, concentration, probably impossible in Kali Yuga. So like you said, give a little of this, a little of that, throw it all together, but are they really going to make progress? I mean, anyone who is on some path, of course it's good. Of course it's better than no path, you know, better than no understanding, no interest in self-realization. But I think what we can do is take that interest, which is sincere, often, and fan that, and explain that, and lead them to the elevator, rather than the ladder. Yeah. Okay, one or two more. One or two.
Yeah. Well, you made a really good point at the beginning of your
lecture. And I'm just going to say one thing, I want to ask a question based on that. And it's that you were talking about how we needed to know the various processes being described here so that we can talk about them with people, with other people. And just like we just mentioned, similar thing. Well, just an example, a few days ago, a hippie couple came here and I was preaching to them. And I made a mistake that, I think many devotees make. The boy was asking some questions. And he asked a question that was impersonally, obviously. That was his vision. And I think I overemphasized in preaching to them Krishna worship, bhakti worship. So in this way, I kind of lost them. Mm. Whereas if I had been conscious of this, to explain to them that it is part of Krishna, this impersonal aspect, like as Prabhupada said, the train is coming, you first hear it, then you see the light, then you see the actual train, and just joining the ladder of yoga, I think that would have been a much better approach, and even said, well, look, if you have even a slight understanding of what I'm saying here, you could always try bhakti if you want, and if you want to go back to one of the other steps, do it that way, that's fine, but I'm just giving you knowledge of all the steps of the ladder. So my question is, basically, and you said it, how important is it for devotees to understand these various processes?
Well, since you're asking me, I'm here, my personal understanding is that it's not terribly important to know all the details. We should know the basics. We should understand what's there and what people are doing, what people are reading, what sort of arguments, especially understanding impersonal arguments, because they come up all the time. And the Prabhupada is always talking, and trying to defeat Mayavadi. And, he bring up, he would challenge devotees with those kind of arguments. So we do need to know those basics. As far as all the detail, I don't think it's so critical. I was thinking of a similar situation. I was a few weeks ago up in, I was in Asheville, North Carolina, which is kind of like the yoga center of the world, And so I was talking to this young woman who was in a shop, and I was talking to her. She said, "Oh yeah, I'm really into yoga." And she says, and I actually gave her a couple books to read, and she said, it's like I've always been interested in all that about the chakras, and I said, that's really interesting. I said, we do more bhakti yoga, which is based on chanting mantras. She goes, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so read about this, In other words, you can, we obviously have to be a little careful in our preaching with people, especially, it's kind of like when they get all excited about something that they're discovering, we dash it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I think you're right when you said that better to encourage them a little bit in what they are doing positively and say, and by the way, you may want, think about this or add this. And then, of course, the more we can give them books, prasadam, and ways of purifying them, they're going to be more receptive to being able to hear. Okay, we should end class one final one for prasadam. Mark, did you?
Thank you, Prabhu. I really like this part of the Bhagavatam where Krishna is speaking. It seemed like a summary of everything, But I find that when I'm preaching myself, if I understand who Krishna is in this aspect of the argument, like especially people are into this thing now, I'm very grateful for God for whatever He's given me. It's a new thing to me. Whenever I say, you believe in God, He said, oh yeah, I'm very grateful. I'm always grateful. So now I said, do you know who God is? Do you want to please Him? And they always said, what? It's like a new aspect. I said, well, you're grateful to God. I said, if you learn a little more who God is, then you want to please Him. And they said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, God is a person like me and you, but He's a supreme personality of Godhead. And He has likes and dislikes. And I said, if we really learn who He is, then we want to please Him. And they always said, oh, never heard that type of, presentation before. So I find mostly in my preaching now, I always said, If you know who God is, and this book will tell you who God is, then you will want to please Him, just like if you have a husband or a wife, you want to please them. And I find that's very effective in my preaching, just putting a little personalism. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you put Krishna in, or God in, the people are interested, they said, oh, yeah, okay. And I find I have their interest a little more.
Very nice preaching. One thing that first I think we find that it's really easier to preach to people who are somewhat theistic than some of them impersonalists. And you have to, even in this area where many people are Christian, but like you say, they understand they have a concept of God and you can kind of build upon that and explain that. Hardcore impersonalists are tough. You know, it's a little harder to get through there. Okay, so I'll go ahead and share Prabhupada. Arrivederci.